It's time for Off the Curb with Justin Spearman.
Welcome to Off the Curb. I will say, in the 3+ year history of doing this and programming in this way, tonight's episode is easily the most requested piece of content we've ever done. And it's really not even close. The amount of messages I've received asking me to bring in a Title IX expert, an attorney with an expertise in labor law in cases like the Mel Tucker situation up in East Lansing, it's staggering. We've been deluged with this. And I do know a few labor attorneys, but I reached out to the counsel for this show and my good friend Wade Fink. And I said, who is the best person in the entire Michigan Rolodex? Who do you know? Who's the top gun in labor law that we can possibly get to talk about this? No hesitation. 10 seconds later, he gets back to me, Deborah Gordon. We bring Deborah Gordon in tonight. I'm really excited to have her. I know you are in high demand, especially now with the story. Thank you, first of all, for joining us here tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
So I want to start here. Let's get right into the nitty gritty because your time is limited, obviously. Let's play the Mel Tucker graphic, Ben, to get an idea of what we're talking about and the launching pad for this. So this is the key clause in the Mel Tucker contract that says he can be fired for cause. This is the key language. Quote, if he engages in any conduct which constitutes moral turpitude or which in the university's sole judgment would tend to bring public disrespect, contempt, or ridicule upon the university. So I'll ask you, Deborah, are we at that level? Let's say we take Mel Tucker at his word and we'll get out of the he said, she said, with what he's admitted to, what we know he did engaging in this relationship with a university vendor. If we just go with his account as gospel, do we think we are at a point where that clause is satisfied from Michigan State's perspective?
I think it very well could be. I mean, the court, there could be a court somewhere that would say, Michigan State, no, what he did is not moral turpitude, and it may not be. But the second part of that clause that you just put up, Justin, gives them a lot of latitude. It says conduct that would bring disrespect to the university. It's having phone sex with a vendor, you know, and whatever went with that, the run up to that. I can, in my opinion, I can say yes. I think there's a high likelihood that they would have the ability in this day and age, given the high level position he's at, the responsibilities he has, he's going into people's homes, talking to their parents. I can see how that could be enough under that contractual provision.
Now, in the balance and wake of this story, there have been a few details that have come out of other coaches' contracts around the country in different sports, including college football. And I guess a lot of these clauses tend to be more explicit. It'll say, a for cause could be including but not limited to, a coach gets caught saying a racial slur on tape, or, it'll kind of enumerate these numerous examples of what could constitute a just cause termination. Is the inherent ambiguity and vagueness of this problematic from the Michigan State perspective, where Mel Tucker's counsel, if it gets to that point, can say, look, this contract down in Clemson has very explicit language. This one is inherently vague. Does that present a problem for Michigan State?
Yeah, the courts don't care that the guy down in Clemson has a different contract. They're going to interpret the contract that is in front of them. Being vague can hurt and it can help. Being broad can hurt or can help. And here it might help MSU because they haven't defined every single checkbox. And hence they have some latitude to say, hey, this is a matter of our interpretation. It should be. It's our employee. And I don't think they're going to have any trouble, Justin, showing disrespect to the university, right? I think the proof is already out there that disrespect has been brought to the university. Now, part of that is because of how they've handled it, of course. But leaving that aside, Mel Tucker has a very bad look here, I think, based on the public reaction. If you were asking me about my day-to-day sexual harassment case in some company somewhere, and some guy contacts an employee and it has phone sex and she doesn't turn off the phone, it may not be as big of a deal as it is here under all these circumstances.
So the accuser in the situation, Brenda Tracy, came out with a statement yesterday, kind of her version of guns blazing, attacking the fact that her name was leaked to the media. It's not really clear how that was done. The first heard name kind of broke out as involved in anything was the story she gave to USA Today. I don't know how that went down, but the sort of working theory that she seems to be operating from, and a lot of people are, is it was a Michigan State Board of Trustees leak or some other university representative leaked this information. I know you can't weigh in on whether or not that happened, but if that is true and that did happen, if a leak of her identity came from Michigan State in violation of Title IX, does that present a problem for Michigan State going forward in fighting against Mel Tucker, where they could be seen as manipulating this and out of bounds themselves?
Okay, first of all, I have no idea how this would possibly favor Michigan State to leak this. So I have a hard time seeing how somebody's going to say you did this on purpose. Now, it's probably some lower level person who, for whatever reason, thought this would be a good story for somebody. But it's going to depend on the level of the employee. I mean, if it's some low level person who just snuck something out there, I mean, we still don't know in the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, who leaked the recent abortion opinion. So, I mean, they're going to have a hard time finding that. And I don't think that's going to weigh one way or another for them. The fact is, the story's out there. It's kind of shocking that it went all these months and nobody heard a word about it to begin with. That all by itself is shocking. And it's shocking that the university officials say they didn't know the details. They heard something, really? And you didn't ask or you didn't find out. And they want to say, we couldn't. It's confidential. So even those of us in the university who run the university had no right to know this. That's illogical. And there's no law that says that.
So you reject the Michigan State position of, you know, we've done everything by the book. This is not the same old Michigan State. You do see some deviation from what they should have done ideally or legally in this scenario.
Okay, to say this is not the same old Michigan State when you literally got the complaint in December, your employee admitted it in March. And so according to you guys, his boss, the AD, still doesn't know the details. That kind of likely sounds like the same old MSU to me, because I see no reason legally, much less practically, that your employer, your boss, wouldn't be made aware that you were accused of this wrongdoing. And the boss might want to know, he did this. I better take the following steps. Or the boss might think, gosh, maybe I better make some plans for the upcoming football, the rest of the football season. There's so many reasons that anybody's boss is going to want to know this. Obviously, this doesn't happen in corporate America. Somebody does something like this, but everybody keeps it quiet. The bosses can't know. It doesn't make sense.
So I don't know if you saw Mel Tucker's statement, and it was too long for us to throw up there. And just so you have seen it, it used a lot of this language, you know, sham process and invoking race, gender, and some other nefarious intent for termination of the contract other than just cause. Did that statement, having read it, which you did that read to you as a guy ranting, or was that something more lawyer-y? And that was something he kind of, what's the angle? What is he going for?
Read it and all I could think of was, did his lawyer really read this? It was a rant. He got stuff wrong legally. I couldn't believe he dropped the race card in there and the gender card. So yeah, I mean, I found that to be odd and not lawyerly. His whole point that it's a sham proceeding is a kind of a complicated legal point. So here's how this works. He is entitled to a process. He is entitled to a hearing. He is entitled to due process if his job is going to, before his job is taken away. I handled the case a couple of years ago that changed the law in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, which includes Michigan, which expanded the rights. In that case, it was a student I had, expanded the rights of the process a student is entitled to before he is kicked out of the university for sexual harassment. But it also applies to employees such as Mel Tucker. And the process is set forth in law. It's not like hard to figure out, and he's got it wrong. I mean, he thinks she has to take an oath. No, she does not under the law. Based on the case I handled and the new law, yes, he gets to cross-examine her and pose questions to her. But it's not a free-for-all. There are rules. And the courts have said you have certain fairly simple rights before your educational interest or your property interest, here he has a property interest in his job, is taken away from you. So I get that he's upset. I get that it seems unfair, but the courts have already looked at all this.
So if you are Mel Tucker's attorney in this case, you're representing him. You've already said that the university has pretty broad interpretations and can, you know, lean into their contract language in a broad sense. What's your strategy here if you are the attorney and not the one he's working with now? What's the best path forward? Because for him, there are $80 million at stake here. You don't seem to love his position in terms of the contract and its interpretation. How do you approach this if you're Mel Tucker's attorney in this case?
It's hard to put myself in it, to be honest with you, because the cases I take are the cases that I really like. But let me give it a shot here. I mean, he's heading to a hearing. So what do? You are going to want to present, and I think he's got lots of stuff to work with here from what I've seen. You're going to present that this was consensual. That's his linchpin. If the complaint here is that they had phone sex, and that's basically it, period, full stop, that he, you know, masturbated on a phone and she didn't turn it off, I would really go after, hey, this was consensual, because sexual harassment is all about consent. It's all about consent. And if it's consensual, there's nothing wrong under their policy and procedure, right? So you've got to show it's not consensual. And that's what I would go after. And it sounds like there's a whole record of them having lots of calls in the evening, a half an hour long. According to him, they talked about each other's bodies, blah, blah, blah. So I would really go in ready to cross-examine the complainant about all of that and about what exactly happened that night and try to show that it's just simply, it was consensual. He had no idea that she was offended by this. And I think he's got a shot at that. So if that's what it gets down to, he could actually win this hearing if MSU, and I'll put in U of M, weren't so usually hell-bent on anything where the word victim is used, ensuring that, the accused is found to have acted wrongfully, which I do see a skew in that regard. And it sounds like that skew is here. But I think on a fair day, you know, if somebody is really trying to decide, did you go over the line? Was this non-consensual? He's got a shot.
So if he does prevail at the hearing, let's say he has an abundance of evidence that, you know, proves his angle and that shows consent, or at least what you would think would constitute consent, doesn't Michigan State still have a right to terminate the contract for cause because of the nature of a personal relationship with a vendor, a canceled or postponed, there's some dispute there, event, the fact that he lied to supposedly, allegedly, an investigator about where this phone call took place? He said it was in Lansing. It ended up being in Florida. Even really matter if he's
and rightly so, you're kind of putting two different standards of proof, two different standards of how do we fire this guy together. So keep in mind, the contract talks about any actions that bring disrespect. We'll use this term. There's more to it, that bring disrespect to MSU. Okay. So, under that bucket, they're going to have to show he did something, you know, serious enough to bring disrespect. And under the contract, I've already said, I think that the phone sex and kind of what went along with the backstory, that is probably enough. Now let's go over to let's call it the Title IX or the sexual misconduct policy. That's over here. This is the track MSU has chosen to run on. They haven't touched the contract. That would take somebody making a decision, Justin. That would take somebody being willing to say to the media, I made the decision to fire this guy, or I made the decision not to fire this guy because I don't think what he did violates the contract, or I think he did. Now, why hasn't somebody done that already? Why are we still discussing this 10 months later? Since he admitted it in March, what's the big mystery? They want to go down this fact-finding path. What facts do you need? Okay, you need one fact. Was it consensual? They already know what happened. So, I mean, I don't know what their strategy is. It's perplexing to me. But this is the track they're on. So you got to keep your buckets separate. And if they're going to throw him out based on the sexual misconduct policy, Title IX hearing, then they're going to have to show it was non-consensual. And he could win on that because that's the path they've chosen. That's where they're going. Now, let's assume somebody down there says, it was consensual. Now what, Michigan State? Now you went through your process. Now let's just hypothetically say some hearing officer says, it was consensual. That's not sexual misconduct under our policy. It was consensual. Now what are they going to do? Now are they going to keep them? Are they going to go back to the contract and say, well, wait a minute. Maybe it was consensual, but it still brought disrespect. So now what are they going to do? That's why I have a very difficult time tracking the strategy. But they pick their path. I mean, my guess is they just picked it to either kick the can down the road or because they didn't have the guts to stand up in front of a camera and say what their decision was, or because they thought it would seem more kosher if they had an actual factual finding. But the contract is more broad than an actual factual finding by a third party.
Yeah, it's a winding sort of on both sides. I'm trying to figure out what both sides are doing. And there's so many conflicting details about what they should know, didn't know, didn't know, who's leaking what. It's a very complex situation. So, I mean, you had a really interesting appearance on Fox. And I want to read your quote because this was the one that stood out to me. You said to Fox this week, if it was just the one phone sex incident and this wasn't Mel Tucker, but an average employee on campus, I highly doubt the person would be terminated for this. So are you making the argument there that Mel Tucker is being singled out for some reason other than the merits that they're putting forward?
Well, I said that because in your average Joe Schmo job, you would depend. Was this the first time? You had an employee who contacted another employee on the phone and did what he did. He didn't know it wasn't consensual. Okay, maybe we'll give him a warning. No harm to the company. It was, at night, blah, blah, blah. We'll make a record for the file. Okay, but here you have a man who's not just Joe Schmo. You've got a guy here who has huge responsibility. And with that comes certain, obviously, expectations. And with it comes further potential damage to the employer for anything he does wrong. He's in charge of what? Hundreds of people? You would maybe know better than I would. Students, staff, just general employees, vendors. We've now learned he's in charge of vendors. So he has such huge responsibility that even a one-off mistake in something that might be sexual misconduct at somebody at his level could have really severe ramifications for an employer and here a school. So yeah, I do think there's a difference, and it's just because, hey, guess what? You've got a $95 million contract. Shocking news. Be on your best behavior.
So a lot of the backlash against Brenda Tracy, the accuser in this case situation, is, it's a cash grab, which I have no idea. I have no idea what she's thinking.
It's not a cash grab. She can't grab any cash.
Well, that's what I'm getting to. And you said that in the okay. Fox interview as well. You said this is not collectible for her. Now, Mel Tucker alleges that their attorney approached Brenda's attorney approached his attorney and said, hey, this is going to make a big write a big check. This will go away. So who knows? I don't know if that's true or not. But what is the angle other than I'm making a self-righteous stand against Mel Tucker? Like, if you're Brenda Tracy, what is the advantage of going this route rather than just trying to, do your best in civil court? I don't get like where she's coming from, if it's anything other than, I was wronged and I want to make a stand here. What is sort of the nefarious intent? Yeah.
So I don't know if it's a nefarious intent, but let me pull back a second and tell you kind of the whole concept behind this process that Mel Tucker is now going through. Really, at the end of the day, this process is generally, I'd say 95% of the time, used for student-on-student sexual harassment. So you have two college students that go out, they have sex. One person says it was consensual, the other one says it was not. And the idea here with this whole policy is, or it's worse, like Ms. Tracy says, she was raped. Okay, the idea of the law in these policies is to ensure that you can continue to have a good educational experience. Hence, if something happens to you that's a violation of the policy or the law, you go tell the university, and their goal is under the law is to ensure that whatever happened to you does not happen to you again by this person. Okay, they're not required to pay you money. In fact, they cannot pay you money. What they can do is find out what happened under their investigation process and then take appropriate action against the wrongdoer. The action is designed not to punish. The action is designed to ensure that the complainant is left alone and she can continue her education in peace. That's the entire purpose of the MSU policy and of Title IX. So now let's go back to your question, Justin. What is her goal here? She can't get money damages from MSU. Mel Tucker has already offered her some money, I guess, sounds like, for her to drop the complaint, but she's decided to go forward. I do see this. I see that people feel that they've been wronged and they want to do something about it. I mean, it's human nature. And it sounds like Ms. Tracy was very upset. I don't know all the details of why, you know, because I know she waited a while to file the complaint. I don't know if she's alleging that she lost her contract or he didn't call her back to do some more speaking. I'm not sure. But something really bothered her and she wants to do something. And this is her path. And boy, has she done something, right?
She has. But yep. do you view, you know, and I know we don't know what happened. We don't know. And we may never know exactly how it went down. But do you find it perhaps damaging to her credibility before the board? If, you know, they're doing this cross-examination, if Mel Tucker says, hey, there's multiple phone calls, half an hour or longer after this alleged incident that you were offended by, you were trying to come back on campus afterward. We know that's a fact. Do you think that threatens her chances of prevailing at the hearing?
I will tell you this. If this was in front of a jury, you know, a jury, a Washtenaw, Ingham County jury, a Detroit jury, I think that would carry a lot of weight in people's minds. Because in my opinion, juries tend to go with common sense. But this isn't a jury. This is some hand-picked hearing officer that MSU has blessed to handle these very particular kinds of cases. So that hearing officer may just say, you know, I don't care what she did before, because this is one of the mantras in this area of the law. I don't care what happened before. I'm only looking at this moment, because you know why? People can change their minds. So the hearing officer may say, okay, so she had a lot of, but yes, your point is very well taken. I mean, it does tend to lend itself as a common sense matter that, yes, this was nothing new to her, that they had engaged in some kind of conduct that sounded to be similar previously. And hence, this wasn't non-consensual, or at least he didn't know it. He had no way of knowing that.
Yeah, I'll finish here. I really only see three different ways this thing could go, and it seems pretty clear to me. Maybe I'm missing one. It's either Mel Tucker is owed the balance of this roughly $80 million. Mel Tucker will get zero, or there's something in between those two figures and there's some kind of settlement outside of a courtroom situation. It's early, but what's your read? Like, where do you think this is going? Which door do you think we're going to end up going through here?
That's such a good question, but I really have to turn back to you and your listeners. You guys have a better feel for what, you know, the MSU community wants to happen here and the powers that be on that board and everybody else and their donors. I mean, is it just that they want Mel Tucker gone and they're going to do it?
I would say close to 90% are, we don't want him here anymore. Yeah. You know, part of that is they struggled on the field last year, and that's a component, and it's incredible. Right. You know, Urban Meyer had a lot more defenders at Ohio State, and it's not because Buckeyes are worse people than Spartans. It's because Urban Meyer was winning titles and going undefeated almost every year. So I think that's part of it. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's a completely righteous, principle-based position, but however people have arrived at that conclusion, I would say close to around 90%. I don't think that's an exaggeration. Very few people out there, you know, banging in the drums in the streets about the situation in favor of Mel Tucker. But I don't know, you know, does that really influence what the fan base thinks about how this is going to resolve? I would think this is going to be a judge's decision ultimately.
Yeah, you know, I just don't see any way he doesn't, if he does get terminated, I don't see any way he doesn't sue. Obviously, he's got a lot, you know, at issue here monetarily. But let's go back to, you know, the path MSU has taken. You know, if they had gotten rid of him based on the contract, they could have then offered him a severance package more easily, I think. And they could have just said, take X amount of money. You know, we've decided under the contract, let's try to work this out. That's normally what happens, right, with these coaches. They work out a deal and they move on. But again, here they're now going down the path where they're literally making a finding. So I'm just thinking in my mind, understanding how their processes work, once that finding is made, now you're going to offer the guy money. That's not normally not what happens in Title IX proceedings. I mean, a decision is made and you're out. So again, I don't get MSU's strategy. In a way, they're kind of putting themselves in a corner. I suppose there's nothing in the law that would stop you from, you know, making him an offer to settle the case, but they're going to have to pony up a lot of money given what his contract is. So, and then just to finish off getting back into the legal weeds, I think it's easier for him to make an argument on the contract side. He could argue about the language and whether this really brought disrespect. You know, the Title IX thing, you know, once they make that decision, the courts are going to be unlikely to overturn that. Not because the decision is wrong. The courts are going to look at, did he get due process? It's, you know, we're not the university. We don't run educational institutions. This is what the courts say. We have to leave it up to the people that run the university. However, what we can require of you is that you give due process. You might get it wrong, but so long as the guy has the process, that's enough. So over on that side, that, you know, Title IX road, sexual misconduct road, you know, it's going to be about the process. On the contract side, it's going to be, hey, is what I did actually wrong?
Yeah, I mean, so, I think if you're Mel Tucker, your argument would be, this was consensual. I didn't do anything wrong. And the thing that brought disrespect upon the university was the false accusation. False narrative.
Yeah, so I agree. 100%. And I think I said there's something like that at the beginning. I mean, how much of the disrespect we were talking about the contract, how much of that has been brought upon itself by the university as compared to Mel Tucker? But on the other hand, we've heard lots of stuff about him being out there on the highways and byways doing various things, right?
Yeah, you said it, not me.
I just out in the highways and byways. I don't know, but just you hear stuff. So
me too. I'm hearing a lot of that same stuff.
So, I mean, that could be lumped in as well to this whole disrespect to the university thing.
I'm fascinated to see where it goes. And I'm going to let you go. I could keep you for 3 hours and talk your ear off. I'm fascinated by your input in this and so grateful for your time. Thank you so much.
Happy to be here. Let me know if you have any questions down the road, Justin.
I will absolutely bug you. And I got to say thanks again to my friend Wade Fink, who is a counsel for our network here and good friend of mine. And
he's the best. I was really loved. His father was just an iconic criminal defense lawyer, as is Wade.
Neil Fink, a famous mafia attorney in the Detroit scene, and one of the best ever,
and a heart of gold, like Wade.
Yeah, I never met his dad, but if he's anything like his son, Wade is a great man and great supporter of ours. And I'm so glad he put me in touch with you. And again, thank you so much for your time and your knowledge. I know you're busy. We are grateful, and I will definitely bug you again. I promise.
All right. Great to talk to you guys.
Thank you so much. Deborah Gordon joining us on a weeknight. Really appreciate her time. Really interesting situation and case. I'm fascinated to see where it goes. I could really, it's like if you're in the high school debate class, you can jump on one side or the other and make an argument, you know, just on either side. I think the findings of the hearing are going to be somewhat interesting. If Mel Tucker is essentially exonerated, the findings presented in the hearing, the evidence presented at this hearing, affirm his version of events. And there's myriad evidence to suggest that his account is either completely accurate or certainly much more accurate than hers. I think his pathway to contesting this is a lot easier. So I understood and agree with what Deborah Gordon said there, where there are two different things going on here, you know, the Michigan State contract situation versus the Title IX, but there is some overlap there because if Mel Tucker is effectively exonerated by the evidence and he has demonstrable evidence to suggest overwhelmingly that this was a consensual relationship and the nature of it, and it continued to be consensual well beyond the date of this alleged incident on the phone that was, well, we know that it happened. It was the consensual nature of it. If he can do that, his pathway to me is pretty clear in court where, look, I didn't do anything to disrespect the university. The thing that brought disrespect upon Michigan State was the false accusation. I didn't do anything wrong. And it was the fact that this person falsely accused me of something that brought shame. And, you know, if it was a consensual act between two adults, you know, it's okay. It's legal. It's not even necessarily shameful to, you know, if you're into weird stuff in the bedroom or whatever, that's, you know, as long as everyone's an adult and consents and, you know, whatever. But then you bring in the vendor component of this, which is, again, a borderline. Because if this is a, you know, bartender that he meets on the road, that's better for him in this situation. If it's a full-time employee of Michigan State University, that would be worse. We're kind of like in the middle. It's not either of those two, which lends a little bit more confusion to an already winding, weird, tangled web. So it's going to be a really interesting case. The bummer is I think it's going to go on for a long time and drag out, and these things tend to do. And there's $80 million at stake. You can pretty much bank on this not being resolved by next Wednesday. So we'll see where it goes. I'm fascinated by it. Deborah Gordon, really appreciate her time. Ben on the other side of the curtain there at the digital curtain tonight. Appreciate you. And we'll be following it. In the meantime, big game Saturday. I think Michigan State's going to be ready. We'll see you. Go Green.